Welcome to the PRI Review, news and commentary brought to you by the Population Research Institute. I'm your host, Christopher Mannion. LifeSite News reports that, according to one of the most influential evangelical Christian leaders in the United States, the sexual revolution began with a widespread availability of birth control. This is news precisely because our Protestant friends have not always been in harmony with the Catholic Church on all of the teaching of Humanae Vitae. It is clear, however, that as our country's morals slip ever more into the mire, the natural law, including the law of cause and effect, will kick in. That's why the testimony of Dr. Albert Moeller, the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, is so important. "We are clearly at a very important turning point," Dr. Moeller tells the David Wheaton radio show, "but you have to go back to the early 20th century, when sexual revolutionaries largely funded an effort to separate sex and procreation, and that was birth control," Dr. Moeller said. He continued, "Most Christians seem to think today that birth control was just something that came along, as something of a scientific or medical development. They fail to see that it was driven by moral revolutionaries who knew that you couldn't have a moral revolution, you especially couldn't have a sexual revolution, unless you could separate sex and babies." End quote. Now, in recent years, evangelical Christians and observers in general have taught the harms inflicted by birth control, from the potential abortifacient properties of some forms of contraception to the way it has unleashed promiscuity and inhibited true intimacy. Author Mary Eberstadt is a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, founded by our old and dear friend Dr. Ernest Lefevre. Eberstadt tells LifeSite News that, when she wrote her 2012 book on contemporary sexual mores and their consequences, Adam and Eve After the Pill, and I quote, "I was just blown away by the accuracy of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae." Eberstadt says that the subsequent rise of commitment-free sex destroyed marriages, spread diseases, and led to the nation's skyrocketing rate of illegitimate births. Dr. Moeller, who released his new book, We Cannot Be Silent, in October, said that the second major development that undermined the family was the no-fault divorce revolution. In the six-year period between 1977 and 1983, 39 states passed laws allowing either party to end a marriage for any reason or no reason. "That was massive," he said. "Evangelical Christians just didn't recognize it for what it was. Not at the time. And Catholics, frankly, we didn't do much better. You can't have anything like same-sex marriage until you redefine marriage, eliminating it as a lifelong covenant," Dr. Moeller said. "Degrading marriage led to a massive spike in cohabitation among heterosexuals," he continued. Now, while he encouraged Christian faithful to establish a relationship with homosexuals to share the gospel, he said that going to a same-sex wedding is one thing we can't do. "And there's one thing we must do, especially because it's unpopular. In fact, it's a matter of life or death." The sexual revolution brought with it a tidal wave of sex education in public schools, some of which was allowed to seep into Catholic schools as well. As a result, sexual activity exploded, and along with it, sexually transmitted diseases commonly known as STDs. Well, as everybody knows, but few will admit publicly, the most virulent form of those STDs are especially rampant among homosexuals who actually practice sodomy. St. Thomas Aquinas called that the unnatural sin because, number one, of course it is profoundly sinful, but second, because it is so unnatural that it does violence to the body as well as the soul. It infects its practitioners with new and vile diseases like HIV/AIDS. Now, we know that the so-called same-sex education palaver taught in schools encourages this practice because the Center for Disease Control tells us that fully 94% of new AIDS cases among young men are caused by male-on-male sex, that unnatural sin whose name is no longer permitted in the public square because it is allegedly offensive to the very homosexuals who are addicted to it. Yes, that's the truth, but the gay lobby doesn't want you to hear it, and sometimes they'll go through great lengths to silence the truth-teller. Consider Dr. Paul Church, a noted urologist. For 30 years, he served the Boston community at Beth Israel Hospital and also taught at Harvard Medical School. All those exemplary qualifications didn't matter when he warned that sodomy and the other practices indulged in by the LGBT community causes a higher incidence of HIV/AIDS, STDs, hepatitis, parasitic infections, and cancers, and psychiatric disorders. Now, his hospital never asserted that anything he said or wrote was false. They couldn't, because it was all true, and it's still true. The Boston homosexual community, however, is one of the most vindictive and hateful in the country, right up there with New York, Washington, and San Francisco. In spite of the support of countless colleagues and public health experts, Dr. Church was expelled from the hospital staff because, as the management lamely put it, his findings regarding the health standards of sodomy were offensive to hospital staff. So he was fired. And guess what? This week, Hillary Clinton wept digital tears about the homosexual with HIV/AIDS who could no longer pay for his medicine, which is very expensive. Hillary wants the taxpayer to pay for it, of course. But no precautions from Hillary about how to stay healthy. Now, Hillary is losing the youth vote to that socialist from Vermont. Do you think she should try to attract kids by telling them to avoid deadly sexual perversions like sodomy so they can live long and productive lives? Don't hold your breath. Yes, we must reach out to homosexuals, Catholics are told by our shepherds, but we cannot lie to them. We cannot welcome their propaganda and their political agendas. Instead, we must reach out to them with the truth about marriage, about sex, and even on the level of physical health itself, with the reality that by becoming active homosexuals, young men are subtracting some 20 years from their life expectancy. Well, enough of the bad news. Here's some good news for a change from Ireland. In the midst of a collapse of the fabled and beloved Catholic culture on the Emerald Isle, we find the Iona Institute, a pro-family group named after the islands where centuries of monasticism in the distant past thrived in the Hebrides off the west coast of Scotland. All children deserve the love of their own mother and father, says David Quinn, the Institute's director, who is also a noted cultural critic. Most recently, Mr. Quinn certainly wasn't impressed with the tsunamis of accolades that followed the death of David Bowie, the rock star who apparently has fans even in the halls of the Vatican. In the heyday of his popularity 40 years ago, Mr. Bowie was undoubtedly ravaged by cocaine psychosis, explains Mr. Quinn, and as such was a champion of, quote, expressive individualism, end quote, a trait which comes off as simply extreme narcissism coupled with a callous disregard not only for others, but himself. Interestingly, since this appeared, the gay community has trumpeted the fact that Mr. Bowie was one of the first international rock stars to come out as a homosexual. But apparently, Bowie cleaned up his act later in life, and he was married for 25 years to a woman, of all things, when he died. Now, why do we pay attention to him at all? After all, like the marvelous Father George Rutler, many of us didn't even know Mr. Bowie existed until he died. Well, let's just say that his version of music appealed to a niche market. in which he was indeed famous, and the consumers of which made no demands of civility or sobriety on each other or their chosen stars. There's a lot more top-notch analysis and reporting from the Iona Institute, and I suggest that you take a look at the good work of these folks on the web. Their address is simple, Iona, I-O-N-A, .ie. And last, according to the New York Times and the Washington Post, babies aren't people, and neither, apparently, are pro-life marchers. In their heroic march, held in the midst of one of Washington's most powerful and historic blizzards, tens of thousands of pro-lifers flooded the streets of Washington. For the Washington Post and the New York Times, they were numbered in the hundreds. Well, admittedly, New York and Washington are the nation's capitals when it comes to abortion, legally promoted sodomy, and the ongoing attack on Christianity and the Catholic Church in particular. Apparently, their media doesn't want their readers to know that the number of pro-life Americans is increasing every day. So they lie. And here's another timely news item. Did you know that while your marriage can be easily terminated, your divorce cannot? When we come back, we'll take a look. You're listening to the PRI Review from pop.org. Here's some great news. PRI has now released the notorious Planned Parenthood organ trafficking videos in Spanish. That's right, the struggle against Planned Parenthood needs to go global, and you can help make it happen. If you have Spanish-speaking friends at home or abroad, please let them know. Here's the story. This summer, the Center for Medical Progress revealed to the world the deep-seated corruption pervasive in Planned Parenthood, one of the world's largest abortion providers. To date, 10 videos have been released showing senior executives of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, PPFA, at various stages in the process of harvesting and selling the organs of aborted babies. Planned Parenthood, a taxpayer-funded organization that receives over $500 million annually from the U.S. government, is supposed to be dedicated to the health and welfare of women. But as many have pointed out lately, PPFA doesn't do a single mammogram. Their clinics aren't licensed to. What Planned Parenthood does do is abort hundreds of thousands of unborn Americans every year. And we now know that many of its clinics are in the business of selling baby body parts, generally without the consent of their mothers. In their greed, Planned Parenthood clinics even put women's life at risk by altering abortion procedures so that especially lucrative parts and pieces of the aborted children can be delivered intact and sold to the highest bidder. The videos released by the Center for Medical Progress have had a huge impact in the English-speaking world. Each video has garnered over 1 million views on the Center for Medical Progress webpage alone, while tens of thousands have seen the entire 3 hours of footage. Unfortunately, slow internet speeds and language barriers have prevented people outside the United States from watching these videos. This is why Population Research Institute has produced a series of videos with Spanish subtitles, short enough to be viewed with ease in the Spanish-speaking world. Now, all of Latin America will have the opportunity to learn the truth about Planned Parenthood. Each video unveils a new level of corruption within the abortion business. In the first video, Deborah Nucatola, Senior Director of the Medical Services for Planned Parenthood, can be seen sipping wine and eating salad while she describes how she obtains intact organs. "I'm going to basically crush below, I'm going to crush above, and I'm going to see if I can get it all intact," she brags. Another shows the president of Planned Parenthood's Medical Directors Council haggling over the price of organs. "I want a Lamborghini," she says. In another, a former STEM Express employee describes how she was forced to cut the brains out of a baby's head while its heart was still beating. Get more money for it that way. Now that PPFA's illegal organ sales have been exposed, they are starting to backtrack. The organization recently announced that it will no longer accept so-called monetary reimbursement for procuring baby parts. Instead, they will harvest the organs of babies for free. This is tantamount to admitting that they were earlier breaking the law, and is still not free, at least to the American taxpayers who pay hundreds of millions of dollars to fund the evil empire of abortion. Finally, there is the issue of informed consent. As the videos make clear, Planned Parenthood's employees routinely harvest the organs of their little victims without asking their mothers for permission. Isn't it the woman's body? We also see how abortionists modify the abortion procedure in order to better obtain what they call a specimen. We even hear them admit to performing illegal partial birth abortions where babies are delivered alive so that their organs can be extracted fresh and intact. Isn't it the woman's choice, after all, whether her baby's remains are to be treated this way? These women don't choose, and they don't consent, and the little girls and boys who are being butchered for all their organs have no say at all. Please help PRI let Spanish-speaking mothers all over the world see these videos. Just go to our website, pop.org, and click the donate button today. You'll be glad you did. Well, here's some interesting news that proves just how upside down our legal system has become, sinking right down into the mire with the popular culture. In New Hampshire, the headline reads, "Couple seeking to undo their divorce get turned down." The state's Supreme Court last month upheld a lower court ruling refusing to vacate a Newcastle couple's 2014 divorce after 24 years of marriage. Terry Harmon and her ex-husband Thomas McCarron argued on appeal that their divorce decree was erroneous because they had mended fences and are a couple once more. Lo and behold, reconciliation. But the justices, in a unanimous ruling issued December 2nd, said the law specifically allows them to grant divorces, not to undo them. Attorney Joshua Gordon, appointed to defend the lower court's ruling, said that allowing the couple's divorce to be undone could jeopardize the finality of all divorces. Divorce is a uniquely fraught area of litigation, Gordon argued. For divorced couples, it is often important to have the solace of knowing that their former spouse is indeed former. Do you get that? Marriage isn't permanent, but divorce is. Down is up. You know what? Some bishops seem to think the same thing, and they're not only in Germany. Thank goodness Pope Francis constantly defends the permanence of marriage. A wonderful priest out here in the valley explains the issue succinctly. Okay, so let's get this straight. Prior to the last couple of hundred years in civil law, marriage was final and divorce was impossible. Today, marriage is no longer final, but divorce is. So divorce is a more important matter in law than marriage, since it must be absolutely protected in law, but not marriage. He goes on to say, this validates the judgment of Walker Percy in Lost in the Cosmos. You live in a deranged age, more deranged than usual, because despite great scientific and technological advances, man has not the faintest idea of who he is or what he is doing. Speaking of deranged, Barack Obama has announced that he wants more change. I've got 12 months left to squeeze every ounce of change I can while I'm still in office, and that's what I intend to do, he recently told reporters. Well, we must pause here to reflect on a fundamental principle, one that flows from Rousseau and Hegel, but is best expressed in brief simplicity by Karl Marx in his famous 11th thesis on Feuerbach. It's very brief. Heretofore, he writes, philosophy has sought only to understand the world. The point is to change it. Well, what does this mean? It means that the revolutionary must ignore reality because it is the enemy. and to destroy it. It is the source of evil. And the new heaven and the new earth will be created by the party after the most destructive and painful war in human history. He calls that war the dictatorship of the proletariat. Notice that dictatorship and violence are intimately combined in Marx, because all history is violence until he and his followers succeed to, as Obama puts it, change as much as they can. Now, it's true that Obama's father was a Marxist, as was his intellectual foster father as he grew up. Clearly, his principle of change matches Marx's desire for destruction. In fact, Marx insisted that the revolution he advocated would be a war. It would destroy everything and remake the world and the cosmos itself. That's why Obama calls for change, not reform. He has intentionally bypassed all the legal avenues permitted by the Constitution to implement his version of change. This is consistent not only with the Marxism of his genes and his upbringing, but of his spiritual director for 20 years, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who pounded the podium in the church in Chicago and roared, "God damn America." Change indeed. For Obama, that means destruction. And the presidential ideologue has done his best to destroy the institutions, freedoms, and truths that build America. Do Americans have enough backbone to win this battle? Let us pray that we can rise to the occasion. The trumpet blast is sounding, which means it's time to reflect on the words of St. Ignatius concerning our common adversary, Satan, the prince of this world, in this reflection by Pope Francis. And I quote, "St. Ignatius taught that it is typical of the evil spirit to instill remorse, sadness, and difficulties, and to cause needless worry so as to prevent us from going forward," the Pope said. "Instead, it is typical of the good spirit to instill courage and energy, consolations and tears, inspirations and serenity, and to lessen and remove every difficulty so as to make us advance on the path of goodness." End quote. The population controllers are still hard at work in Latin America, folks, and their tactics are grim indeed. When we come back, we'll take a look at Peru and Guatemala. By now, we all know that Planned Parenthood is accused in the United States of allegedly violating the law by, among other atrocities, selling baby body parts. But you might not know that Planned Parenthood is not alone. The terrorist organization known as ISIS, whose members are massacring Christians, driving millions from their homes, and blowing up churches all over the Middle East, they're in the body parts business too. Yes, it's true. ISIS stands proudly with Planned Parenthood. ISIS supports the harvesting of human organs from living captives to save Muslims' lives, even if it costs the captives' lives, according to a document obtained by U.S. Special Forces. The terror group's Islamic scholars sanctioned the practice in a ruling that raises concerns that the extremists may be trafficking in body parts, Reuters reported, and the news agency could not independently confirm the authenticity of the year-old document, which U.S. officials said was among items retrieved by the troops in a raid in eastern Syria last May. The document states, and I quote, "The apostate's life," the apostate, that's us, "and organs don't have to be respected and may be taken with impunity," end quote, the document reads, and it's in the form of a fatwa or religious ruling from the ISIS so-called Research and Fatwa Committee. Well, there you go. Organs that end the captive's life if removed. The renewal of that type is also not prohibited, Fatwa number 68 says, according to a U.S. government translation. Now, the document does not provide proof that these folks actually engage in organ harvesting or trafficking, but it does sanction the activity under ISIS's radical interpretation of Islam, according to Reuters. The document also does not define apostate, although in Islam, that's us. Though ISIS has killed or imprisoned non-Muslims and Muslims who don't follow the group's own radical views, especially the Shiite Muslims who are so populous in the Middle East, but still a minority. The fatwa justifies the practice in part by comparing it to cannibalism in extreme circumstances, a practice the group said Islamic scholars had long allowed. And I quote, "A group of Islamic scholars have permitted, if necessary, one to kill the apostate in order to eat his flesh, which is part of benefiting from his body," it says. Now, during the May raid last year, the elite troops grabbed a trove of computer drives, thumb drives, CDs, DVDs, and papers, said Brett McGurk, president, Obama's special presidential envoy for the Global Coalition to Counter ISIS, again, according to Reuters. McGurk said the Research and Fatwa Committee reports directly to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Iraq has previously accused the group of harvesting human organs and trafficking them for profit. Ali al-Hakim, Iraq's ambassador to the United Nations, claims that 12 doctors in the ISIS-held city of Mosul were killed for refusing to remove these organs from living people. The UN Special Envoy for Iraq said at the time that he would investigate the claim, but no update has been provided. Well, ISIS isn't the only gang that's getting away with murder. Planned Parenthood's affiliates, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, PPFA, and International Planned Parenthood Federation, IPPF, are still getting away with murder overseas. Around the world, and especially in Latin America, the baby-killing giant shades the truth about its abortion-related activities. It runs roughshod over local anti-abortion laws and violates local pro-life sentiment, all with seeming impunity. But not anymore. With your tax-deductible gift, PRI will throw the book at the abortion giant overseas, just as pro-life groups are doing here at home. Did you know that PPFA spends about $38 million a year lobbying to legalize abortion in countries around the world? If they are successful, they can kill as many, if not more, babies overseas as they do in the United States. This is their mode of population control. Kill brown and black babies. But there's a hitch. Because abortion remains illegal in most Latin American countries, neither IPPF or PPFA is eligible for governmental funding for abortion-related activities as they are in the U.S. So they get around the law as only they know how to do, by lying. With a wink and a nod, they disguise the programs they are funding as education or health programs, women's rights, human rights protection or promotion, and anti-discrimination initiatives aimed at protecting vulnerable groups such as women or LGBTs, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender in their vernacular, but never protecting unborn babies. Never, never, never. Catholic bishops throughout America and Africa complain about this. They call it ideological imperialism, but their voices are not heard in Congress because America's bishops depend on billions in government funding, U.S. taxpayer funding, for their own charities. They don't want to bite the political hand that feeds them, and that bite would hurt. PRI receives no government funding, so we aren't hampered by those golden handcuffs. That's why your tax-deductible year-end gift to PRI is so important today. As the lead group investigating Planned Parenthood's activities overseas, PRI's Latin American office has uncovered PPFA's thinly disguised efforts to undermine pro-life laws and legitimate abortion on demand. But we've only found the tip of the iceberg, and there is more work to be done, work that we cannot do alone. Your generous tax-deductible gift will help PRI hire a seasoned pro-life legal team to help us expose, investigate, and prosecute Planned Parenthood's affiliates everywhere they prey on women, especially overseas. Together, we'll expose, investigate, and prosecute PPFA and IPPF everywhere it tries to hide the truth. Now, this two-prong attack, complementing the hearings taking place in Washington, will force Planned Parenthood to fight on two fronts. What better way to strike a blow against the real Planned Parenthood, the one we all saw in those horrific videos, than to come at them here and abroad? So please, make a tax-deductible gift to support this and all of PRI's baby-saving efforts around the world. Yes, they're big, and they're powerful, but remember David and Goliath. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. Help us put those smooth stones into David's sling as we go out to meet Goliath. You'll be glad you did. Here's the latest from PRI Research. 25 years after hundreds of thousands of women were forcibly or coercively sterilized in Peru, these victims are still waiting for justice. A recent decree issued by the Peruvian Justice Ministry may help these women receive reparation for the crimes committed against them. The politics of abortion is complicating this process, however. Many pro-aborts in Peru who once supported the sterilization campaign are now perversely attempting to use the issue to leverage support for legalizing abortion. Their political leaders have turned the issue against pro-life advocates in an attempt to silence the very voices that have always opposed sterilization, but remain aligned politically with the party once responsible for carrying out the campaign. The good news is that these efforts have failed, at least for the moment. Pro-life congressmen have carried the day as the Peruvian Congress upheld the right to life for victims of rape. The measure failed in large part because of Population Research Institute's successful effort to expose the cynical political tactics of pro-abortion advocates. It was a victory for the Citizens Movement in Defense of Life, said Carlos Polo, director of the Latin American Office of the Population Research Institute, to ASI Prensa in Peru. Last Tuesday's vote was the second time that the Congress of Peru had rejected a bill aimed at decriminalizing abortion in cases of rape. An earlier vote by the Committee on Justice and Human Rights this past May rejected a similar measure. Pro-abortion Peru First Lady Nadine Heredia had expressed support for the failed measure that would have legalized abortion in cases of rape, referring to pro-life members of the Popular Force Party, headed by Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of ex-President Alberto Fujimori. Heredia tweeted, "Those who want to sell themselves as defenders of life forget that for 10 years they defended forced sterilization," end quote. Pro-life Congresswoman Martha Chavez, a member of the Popular Force Party, condemned the sterilization campaigns long before the current election cycle now underway in Peru. "I had to disagree with the government when they passed a law that, for me, is immoral. The one on sterilization. This law was an abuse against human dignity," Chavez said in an interview with Caritas. As pro-abortion advocates continue to use the sterilization campaign for political purposes, women who were forcibly sterilized still wait for full recognition of their demands for justice. On November 6, the Justice Ministry issued Supreme Decree 006-2015, JUS, which will establish the Registry of Victims of Forced Sterilizations to officially document any sterilization campaign abuse that occurred between 1995 and 2001. Victims will also be eligible to receive free physical and mental health care and will have access to free legal services. The decree does not provide these benefits for women like Olimpia Florinda Roma Alvarez, who were coercively sterilized between 1990 and 95. The sterilization campaigns were launched to reduce the country's fertility rate, particularly among poor and indigenous women. Regulators set a cap of 3.3 children per woman as a target for total fertility going into the new millennium. But investigations by PRI in the late 90s, launched at the invitation of the Cardinal Cipriani and the Peruvian Conference of Catholic Bishops, helped to stop and expose the widespread coercive and forcible sterilizations being carried out. PRI also brought victims and eyewitnesses of campaign abuses to testify before the United States Congress. The hearings led Congress to pass the TEART Amendment, which prohibits U.S. federal funding for family programs that seek to fill quotas and targets or seek to pressure or bribe acceptors. Cases investigating the abuses of the Peru sterilization campaign have been opened and closed a number of times since 1999, and despite widespread abuses, only a handful of doctors have since been implicated. A total of 2,091 women have registered complaints with the public prosecutor's office. With the creation of the Registry of Victims, many more are expected to report cases of abuses. After all, over 300,000 women and 20,000 men were sterilized during the campaign, almost all of which targeted poor and indigenous women. Even the pro-abortion organization CLADEM noted that the program is oriented towards women in extreme poverty, indigenous women. The authorities promote irreversible methods exclusively. Well, at least 44 women are known to have died as a result of complications following these litigation procedures. Sterilizations were often carried out in rural areas by traveling doctors in unsanitary and unsuitable conditions. Doctors were pressured to meet targets and quotas. Ligations were often hastily done. On one occasion, almost 150 women were sterilized over the period of only 2 days. In his testimony before the U.S. Congress, Dr. Hector Chavez Chorchon described the situation women are facing in Peru. These doctors do not like the way in which people are brought in for these surgical procedures, where information is poor, incomplete, and generally deficient. Also, the places where these operations are performed are for the most part unsuitable, and the personnel often insufficiently trained. The Ministry of Health denies that there are campaigns and quotas referring to sterilizations and absolves itself of its responsibility without taking into account that the doctors work under their orders. Doctors work under pressure from their superiors, they're given quotas, and they submit to other more subtle forms of pressure as well. In one instance, physicians were so desperate to meet quotas that when the clinic ran out of anesthesia, the doors to the operating room were shut, so that patients waiting outside would not hear the screams of the women being sterilized. Many of the physicians doing sterilization procedures were poorly trained. Several instances where women had their intestines perforated have been reported, including Avelina Sanchez Nolberto, who, in her testimony before Congress, related her inability to pay for the medical treatment necessary to remedy the complications following her ligation procedure. She said, "This was very expensive and I owe the hospital, but I do not have the ability to pay them back or to continue my treatment because of the expensive medicines I need. I am desperate from this situation." End quote. Health festivals were held in rural villages to promote and drum up support for sterilization. Free sterilizations were offered to the largely undereducated and illiterate women living in impoverished rural areas. The Peruvian Conference of Bishops noted that the women were pressured, taking advantage of their little understanding of the matter. End quote. The doctors and nurses involved in the sterilization campaign were often relentless in pursuing clients, going door to door to find acceptors and pursuing patients in their private homes when they failed to show up for an appointment. According to Dr. Yong Mota, a former health advisor during the sterilization campaign, and I quote, "If the Ministry of Health did not campaign house to house, people would not come," he said in an interview with David Morrison. A lack of informed consent was also widespread. Many women were not informed of possible health consequences. Others, like Rufina Parco Escobar, have been reported to have been given authorization forms while in pain or under duress. At 22 years of age, Rufina was in labor and under a great deal of pain when she was admitted into the operating room for a cesarean section. She did not realize that she had been given forms authorizing sterilization until after the procedure was completed. Her newborn baby, meanwhile, died within 3 hours of delivery. These sterilization campaigns are going on all over Latin America. Missionaries in Guatemala report that the government there was telling its citizens that it is patriotic to get sterilized. Men, especially, were targeted. Imagine, now the word patriot comes from patria, the Latin word for fatherland. And here in this overwhelmingly Catholic country of Guatemala, the government is telling fathers not to be fathers. Why? I think we know why. The United States government and Planned Parenthood-type outfits are offering veiled bribes in the form of foreign aid and health assistance to governments all over Latin America. And in this case, the State Department under this president has been assiduous. It is its first priority to promote sodomy and the destruction of life internationally as well as within the United States. Many of these politicians down in Guatemala, unfortunately, treat these so-called grants like the bribes that they really are. In return, they are glad to do the bidding of the international anti-life lobby. The good news? The Guatemalan president, who personally backed that campaign, Otto Perez Molina, is now in jail, along with his vice president. And the charge? Bribery and corruption. Let us pray that the entire people-hating crowd of controllers will soon join them. This is Christopher Mannion. Thanks for listening.